So I actually, when I did the show notes, I went back and read through the some of them, the ones you'd flagged, I'd already read, and I realized that as I get older, I get more and more particular about music. Like, I can't have just silence in the background when I'm trying to read or write, but almost any kind of music just becomes distracting, and so I don't have anything other than, I think, the Steve Reich piece that I posted on Facebook the other day was a good example of that. Something that's kind of repetitive and hypnotic, but without being obtrusive. You know, even if it has melodies in it from time to time, nothing that's too specific. You guys have anything that you like to read or write to?
It depends. Sometimes I need, like if I take some classical music, turn it down so I have something in the background, that'll help me focus a little bit, and that way I'm not checking the internet every 5 seconds and seeing what's on Facebook. That keeps me slightly focused if I have like classical music or something that doesn't necessarily have a whole bunch of words that I'm trying to listen to.
So with that, you just kind of drift off into Twitter? And so.
Well, it's like, I'll write one sentence.
Something could be happening right now.
Let me check CNN, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Okay, another sentence. CNN, Facebook, Twitter. Yeah. It's not good. It's not good.
Does that change?
So you don't even get through ADHD. You get to like the A.
I get
and the, then you're gone.
I get. I'll have the A and the H out, and then. Yeah. Anything to avoid work.
Is one of the things in the show is the changing character of the internet. Do you think that is part of that kind of increasing flightiness? That people have a very short attention span. What the masses seem to want is just the shortest possible version of the idea, which I'm fine with, but they also want it spoon-fed, and they want a video of it, which I can't stand, or a list, and it just drives me a little crazy. But that seems to be what that Vox piece said we were drifting toward.
Well, like, I think there's a few things with the Vox piece, but part of it, yes, kids these days, get off my lawn, kids these days are born multitasking, which is unfortunate because their brains haven't adapted to that. They still do all their multitasking horribly, but they are born that way and they get itchy.
They're more confident in their ability to multitask than they are effective.
And so I think that's why they prefer a video or a meme-based list, is because they can watch the video while texting someone while working on their homework. Whereas if I have to give them an article to read, then they have to sit down and read the article. And that takes time. And who has time to, like, read through an article when you could just watch the video while doing three other things poorly?
Yeah. That seems totally backwards to me. Because for me, the reason that I hate video is that I can't multitask while doing it. It requires my complete attention. I can't be doing other things at the same time.
Well, we all know that you got out of a time machine from the 1800s. You are an unmillennial.
I'm trying to remember.
You're the anti.
There was a story that Justice Souter's clerks gave him a quill pen once with an inscription, "Forward into the 19th century." I always thought that was pretty good.
Highly appropriate.
But I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being behind the times, and if being with the times means what was in that Vanity Fair piece, I don't want to be with the times. That was just so unbelievably horrifying that it just made me think, you know, if Vicky ever shuffles off this mortal coil, I'm just going to pack it in and say, you know, the bachelor life's for me. Yeah. Because if that's the alternative, that it just strikes me as the worst of all possible worlds.
That's the possible alternative. They mentioned in the Vanity Fair piece that the research actually shows overall millennials are supposedly having less sex than the Generation Xers.
And then fewer sexual partners.
Yeah, fewer sexual partners. And then they poo-poo those numbers. So it's the market. There's choices. And it's really easy to be a hedonist. You can order it up to your doorstep if you want to. And yes, you know, you have to be more selective if you're going out dating nowadays and trying to use the internet and all dating and all that good stuff. You have to be very careful with your filters and all that lovely stuff.
I hadn't really thought the connection that I had drawn was between the Vanity Fair piece and the National Review piece that Sam had put on the list about affirmative consent. But that actually does connect nicely with the changing internet piece, because I mean all this stuff is internet. We tend to conflate web and internet.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah,
you know, I was marginally aware of what Tinder was before I read the article. I infer that what it is basically an app that is primarily focused on sex rather than relationships. It's sex where relationships may ensue if people aren't careful, as opposed to eHarmony or something like that, which is wants to think of itself as relationships, and sex may break out if people aren't careful. But it seems like it's the worst possible version of that. But as I read the article, people are kidding themselves about what's actually going on. There's still this kind of... you could make an argument, setting aside the kind of the concerns, and I'm sure you guys had it in the back of your heads as I did reading that article, that you know this is exactly what Paul VI warned was going to happen,
mm-hmm.
and you know starting from the background of Catholic sexual morality and fornication and all that kind of stuff. But if you set that aside and just think of it from the perspective of the market, there is surely some value in having a means to quickly and easily obtain sex as a commodity. Because apparently there are men who want that and women who want that. There's probably a lot more men than there are women. And then alternatively, in addition to that, having apps like eHarmony and so on, where people can pursue more serious relationships. But you kind of filter out the interests a little and treat these things as commodities. There are issues with treating them as commodities, but if it is a commodity, there's some means of introducing a market, then, well, all right, fair enough. But it's not doing that. The Vanity Fair piece suggests that everyone is just really, except the men, are really miserable and in two minds about whether this is actually what they want. You know, they are at least talking as if this is not what they want, at least most of the time.
Well, to take the market analogy, in order for a market to function, you need to have equal players
mm-hmm.
with perfect knowledge. If you have unequal players or imperfect knowledge, you end up with market fluctuations. And men and women are not equal players. Not, you know, we're equal under the law and all of that, but we have different desires, we have different focuses, and so if you take an app like eHarmony, which turns people, its core is turning people into an object. There's a face, and you say yes or no to the face.
You mean Tinder?
Tinder.
Because I was going to say, I tend to think that the value... Well, I guess I was trying to say is that the value of Tinder might be that it removes from eHarmony people who are only looking for that. Well, at least could.
From a utilitarian standpoint, that's a value. Unfortunately, you know, it plays into the worst... You know, it's horrible from an evolutionary standpoint.
Well, it's worked out pretty well for me.
Like, there are so many possible jokes.
You're a giant fan of Tinder?
No.
A big fan of Tinder?
Yeah. No, but...
How many swipes do you get on your...
No, what Tinder has done for me, despite the fact that I've never downloaded it, is it has... in a way, shown young women a lot of things about young men.
Mm.
And so people like me who are a little older, a little more stable, a little more mature, are actually more appealing in the market precisely because we are a rare commodity. Mm. Particularly, I noticed a lot of the girls I would meet at a bar who would actually get to know me over the course of a few weeks would typically... start sharing with me things like, you know, I'm looking for a guy, you know, and I found this one guy, he's not sleeping around, and I really like that about him. Which kind of says a lot about what they're seeing for the most part.
Most bigotry of low expectations.
Right. Like,
what I really want in a guy is he doesn't sleep around on me.
Yes.
That seems like a minimum prerequisite.
It is a horrible low bar. It's also valuable that young women are actually seeing that that's something important. And in a way, the sort of terrible misogynistic depravity of it all can be enlightening in the sense that it shows them exactly what the problem is. Because they get smacked in the face with it over and over and over and over again. And even if you're not too bright like me, you still learn.
I'd have to say, yes, that's knowledge, but at what cost?
Right. It's a very high cost.
Yeah.
And
both personal and social.
Right, I don't like the fact that they have to pay such a high price for that knowledge. Obviously, you know, believing that your parents are not total idiots is probably easier than spending 10 years going through really bad relationships to figure it out. But at least they're learning.
You know, the other thing that Tender does is it gives young adults the excuse not to date. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing they talked, like, one line in the article that I've noticed a lot and seen in a lot of different places is that people don't know how to date anymore. People don't know how to enter relationships. And that's kind of scary. Yeah.
How would they ever know?
Well, I'm not sure that they even know how to. You know, it occurs to me that when we go out to dinner, by and large, we're talking amongst ourselves. You know, sometimes someone will pull out a mobile device, but by and large, we're actually talking and interacting. Mm-hmm. And when you look at people, and this is kind of, again, a get-off-my-lawn kind of, spear-shaking thing, you'll see people sitting around a table looking at their mobile devices, and it just strikes me as, well, of course they're not able to date. They're barely able to sit around a table with friends and converse.
It is it's a big problem among student employees, too, at the university.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed a lot of them have very rudimentary social skills, and that's coming from me. My social skills are not the greatest.
Right.
They're much worse. And that's largely because they've been raised to put all their energy into the tech, you know, allow the technology to do the work of socializing, so that they never gain the skill to do it themselves. It's a labor-saving device that has a cost of saving us from certain valuable skills, too.
That is one thing that the upside to having your primary interaction be through social media of various kinds is that it allows you to be self-selecting. I try not to do that. But I know that most people are a lot more free about that than I am. Precisely because I want to avoid that kind of epistemic closure where the only people I know are people who agree with me and you end up losing that external corrective. The creation of safe spaces is very easy on social media. You surround yourself by people who you like, and if someone is a problem, you can get rid of them pretty easily. So I kind of understand the appeal of it, but that kind of brings you back to the changing nature of the internet. That I was trying to think when I read. Did you post that, or did you just respond to it? In my mind, I associate it with you.
I responded to it. Yeah.
I read that, and it was immediately apparent to me that that's true. I completely agreed with everything in the article, but I can't quite put my finger on how it is, other than this kind of online polarization. As things have moved towards social media, it's very easy to block out things that you don't want to hear. But then I'm not sure that that wasn't the case in 2005. It just had a different character back then. Because back in, you know, 10 years ago, the polarization was, well, you know, I may read Red State and you read Daily Kos, and you just don't go to the other websites.
Mm-hmm.
There was no kind of interaction. What always struck me, do you guys know the website Memorandum? It's kind of an aggregator of news sources and blog responses. And it always struck me as interesting that it wasn't just that you had a news story where the top-level story was something in the Washington Post, and then you had a list of conservative blog commentary and liberal blog commentary. They weren't even talking about the same thing, ever. And there was still that kind of polarization. And so my first thought was that this kind of self-selection thing has become more acute, but I'm not really sure that that's the case. I don't know what is killing it, but I'm pretty sure that it's not just the self-selection thing that that comes from social media.
I'm going to sound not like a capitalist, but I think big money is killing the internet.
Okay.
All of these, you know, Reddit used to be the Wild West, you know.
Reddit's still pretty Wild West.
It still is pretty Wild West, but they're getting ready to, you know, put up those gates. Mm-hmm. Fence it in, manicure the lawn, and get rid of those, you know, fascist and neo-Nazi and conspiracy theory riffraff and banish them. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I think that's a shame. I want my fascist right where I can see them. I want my communist right where I can see them. What happens is these big money people get involved and they want to make a profit. Mm-hmm. And the way you make a profit is you make sure whatever you're spewing out is not offensive and appeals to as many people as possible. At least that's how big money approaches this. Mm-hmm. Successful people be as offensive as possible because that gets the clicks. But that's what's going to tame the internet. It's not going to kill the internet. The internet's still going to be there.
It'll be more bland.
But yeah, it's going to be more bland. And then more and more people will start doing things like going using Tor or using, I heard there's a new version of Reddit that's going to be coming out that uses an atomizer, sort of the things that they're using with Bitcoin, and that way no one can ban any topics ever. And that's not the way to go either. You need someone having some control, but I think this is going to totally divide the internet, and we're not going to keep track of the wild elements anymore, which is worrying.
I think what your point suggests is actually that the problem is less big money and more people being unable to handle their own emotional responses when confronted with other views.
Yeah.
Because big money wouldn't see a market advantage in taking away those opposing views if people were able to handle them. Mm-hmm. It would be no big deal.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the difference I see in the internet as of 2003 to 2005 and the internet as of now, is that at that point on the internet, yes, you had lots of opposing views and people were really mean to each other, just nasty jackasses a lot of the time. And people just dealt with it and they learned to cope with opposing views that were sometimes nasty and mean. Or they got off the internet, mm-hmm. Which was probably a safer choice for them.
Or they self-selected into, you know, Red State and Daily Cost.
Right, or they decided, I'm going to these two websites, and I'm not going anywhere else. So either they dealt with the opposing views, or they found an echo chamber. But at least those who were willing to entertain opposing views just dealt with it. They didn't try to have those opposing views shut down. You know, they didn't try to take ownership of the site by, you know, constantly playing, I'm aggrieved. You know, I kind of picture in my head a meme where a soccer player is lying on the ground pretending they're injured. You know, that's the kind of thing that I see online a lot.
Yes, yes.
I have been wounded by these words.
Sticks and stones may be a minor irritant, but names will really hurt me.
Yes.
Maybe this is just because I tend to conflate, in my mind I conflate the parts of the internet that I frequented in the aughts with the internet more broadly, but I can't help but have in the back of my mind that the time when it changed was after the 2008 election. I tend to have in my mind that character and growth of a lot of the political internet presupposed the Bush administration,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of fire. And a lot of growth was people who really hated the Bush administration now had an avenue to express that feeling that hadn't existed before. You know, anyone could start a blog, anyone could post comments, and because a lot of people were very aggrieved by what was going on, they did so, and that drove a lot of the growth. But then once Obama was elected president, then there was no need for that anymore. And on the other side, there was no need for a network. So there was a blog, and there may have been others as well, that was just dedicated to President Bush has nominated these judges, and we need to push past the liberals who are trying to block them and get them confirmed. It was called, prosaically enough, Confirm Them. You know, imaginative titles are not really a conservative speciality. But there was that, of course, ceased to have any real value when Obama was elected. And the left saw no particular utility in recreating those kinds of networks, other than kind of you would get kind of ad hoc memes that were pushed around social media. Maybe that was because the internet had just changed by that point. But to me, that was a real change in the character of the internet at that time. And it may have been just because I dropped out of following these things a lot at that point. My recollection would be that between 2005, maybe 2006 and 2011, when I was regularly writing for the group blog that I was contributing to, I was reading a lot and I was posting just about every day. And there would be some pretty serious article every week. And nowadays, it's a good month if I can churn out any article. I think that you're the same, that you write fairly long, substantive article every month or so. And the rest of the time, we're just not... Our interaction and engagement is through Facebook, and it's shorter and it's more in response to stuff. All that has just changed in its character since the Bush administration. And so in my mind, at least, there's a relatively clean division between the Bush era and the Obama era internet.
Two things. One, blogs and the growth of blogs was unsustainable. It's just too much energy to maintain such a small site and get so relatively few views. It was these people who dedicated so much time into it, and then they'd have to respond, and then they'd have to check their facts and readjust their articles and all
of
that.
Did you just suggest that the bloggers check their facts? That's amazing.
They like go in. A lot of them were after the fact posting,
okay,
going in and checking. But
I mean, I know I did. But...
Yeah, some of them. But it was just too much. They were going to give up and move on eventually. I think the changing of the presidencies provided a good opportunity to that. And then you had the larger websites who filled that void a little bit with smaller content.
There were like a handful of blogs that kind of achieved escape velocity.
Yeah.
And everyone else was being artificial. I mean, this kind of plays into what I was suggesting, that you had these handful, Dan Reynolds' blog might be an example, you know, that just achieve escape velocity, and they get millions of hits, and they become self-sustaining,
mm-hmm.
Because they can get ad revenues and so on. And then what's the incentive for all the other, the plankton? Right? You remember the old Truth Laid Bare ecosystem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All the kind of people who are plankton in that system, what is it that's driving them to keep writing? And I think for a lot of them it was because I really hate the Bush administration and I want to say so because, you know, the Chimperator will not silence this voice. And then as soon as the Chimperator was no longer the Chimperator, he was the Chimperator Emeritus. They didn't care anymore. And so there's no longer anything kind of keeping air under the sails. And the opposition to Obama on the right took different forms. They went out and protested as part of the Tea Party movement and so on, and did much... there just wasn't the same cachet of online activism that followed Obama, that followed Bush. Am I wrong to think that? Is that just wild misrecollection?
I think that's part of it. I think another part of it is just plain old demographics. The people who were angry at Bush were typically of a specific age. Not that I'm casting aspersions on that, because I am of that age.
You are quintessentially that age.
But I am very much of that age, and I was never a fan of the Bush administration. I just didn't spend all my time writing blog pieces about it.
But you weren't angry about it. There are a lot of people in your kind of age who were actually very, very angry about it.
Yeah.
And genuinely believed that the stormtroopers were coming any day now.
Yeah.
Nutty though that was, I mean, you know, they were crazy, but they really...
I would say that I was angry, but in a very lighthearted, sarcastic way. and I think from a demographic standpoint, more of it's just that they got older. Mm-hmm. They started having kids or getting more serious about their careers.
Getting on Tinder.
Yeah, or getting on Tinder. They, maybe they wanted to travel, but you know, life changes and your hobbies tend to go away when you get older.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing that I think changed the internet forever was whenever Grandma joined Facebook.
Yes.
I mean, that totally changed, because how many people, their primary interaction with the internet is through Facebook. Mm-hmm. And in fact, in developing countries now, whenever people go get their first cell phones, they say, not can I get the internet with this, but does it have Facebook? Mm-hmm. And their only way of interacting with the internet is through Facebook. And that has shaped everything and how we present content and what people click on. It's very interesting.
I mean, that's what I said earlier, that we do tend to conflate the web and the internet. Mm-hmm. And that's... So it may be that it's actually not the internet that's changing and dying, it's the web that's changing and dying. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could... If that's right, then I could delete Safari off of my iPhone and see no real change in the way that I interact with the world, because if I have the Facebook app on there, if I have the Reddit app on there, I have the Twitter app. These are all still internet applications, yep. But they're not web, or at least the way I'm interacting with them is not through a web browser. That's probably a tangent, actually. I do know what you mean, because while it was, you know, what it started out as, which is a social media tool for college-age kids to post pictures of themselves doing just insanely inappropriate things, inevitably they're not going to want to do that once their parents friend them on Facebook, once grandma friends them on Facebook, and so on.
Yep.
I'm not sure that all of our students have Facebook accounts. I'm pretty sure that most of them have Twitter accounts. In part, I think, because they don't want to have mom and dad hassling them, but also because they want brevity. Again, it comes back to that thing of, I don't want to waste my time reading very long articles. Yeah, the worst thing in the world for me is TLDR. Mm-hmm. You know, that's you might as well hold up a sign saying, I'm stupid.
Yeah.
You know, and, but at the same time, I kind of understand that, because when I get these really long, rambling emails, or voicemails are the worst, where someone is, or you know, you sometimes hear someone call into a talk show like Ethic Answers Live, it's like they've never listened to the show, and they don't know how to ask a question. They'll ramble on for about 15 minutes, and you can hear the frustration mounting in the host's voices at this person who's just going on and on and on to ask what turns out to be a very simple question. So on the other hand, I do understand that if you are expecting to have your time wasted, the nice thing about Twitter or a text message is that there's not a lot of time to waste. You've got to get it done in a quick way. So that by itself is going to drive people towards more limited platforms. You've got to say it in 140 characters, because that's your other only option. Does Twitter do video support video yet?
People link to video on Twitter a lot.
Link.
I mean, there's a thing called Vine, I think, which is like 20-second videos.
Yeah.
Usually 30, I think, is the max.
Okay. Does it have sound?
Yeah, you can do sound on Vine.
So you could have some kind of dueling Vines.
And people do.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a thing.
I'm guessing the same image just comes into both of our heads, which is the Dub Smash War between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes. So, that's a good example of the Dub Smash War. Yeah, that was interesting.
I love that there seems to be a genuine affection between... I don't know why, it improves my enjoyment of a show knowing that the people actually like each other, even though it makes no difference whatsoever to me. You think back to, like, The Wall. Pink Floyd hated each other at this point, mm-hmm. and yet they made some really good music. And it doesn't affect my enjoyment of The Wall in the slightest, but it improves my enjoyment of The Next Generation, thinking that these people were all having an enormous amount of fun making this show.
It's the authenticity thing. Mm-hmm. We're so used to our stars being inauthentic that we want to see this manufactured authenticity. I think Taylor Swift is very good at that whole Dub Smash thing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of shows that. And we want the people that we watch on TV, the people whose music we listen to, We want them all to be good, happy, nice people, whether or not they are or not. And
I kind of assume that they're on drugs and they're unhappy. At least in the music, at least in the music business.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I was going to ask about the Taylor Swift piece, but there seems to be a distinction there. There's a lot more music seems to be based out of Nashville. I assume Taylor Swift is based out of Nashville. Maybe
yes.
She isn't. And they seem to be relatively well adjusted, as opposed to the traditional, customary, or received, or whatever language you want to use. The old fashioned music industry that was based around New York and Los Angeles. Why is Taylor? I know very little about Taylor Swift. I'm kind of aware that she's a pop singer.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a couple of songs that she did that I enjoyed. She's kind of pop country.
Yes.
I'm assuming that Hayden Panettiere's character on Nashville is a brutal satire of her. Why
I
is she authentic?
Well, she's authentic because she's one of the few female artists who writes all her own songs.
Okay.
She talks about her love life in her songs, which apparently people think is a big deal. She also does things with her interactions with fans. She, like, sent one fan over $1,000 one time because they did something for her and stuff like that, which her fans just adore. Beyond that, she does things like recently with her spat with Apple, where Apple has their new streaming service
mm-hmm.
for music, and they wanted to give so many months free, and they weren't going to pay the artists for those months.
Okay.
So if you listen to the music, Apple wouldn't pay out royalties.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor Swift, even though she didn't need the money, decided to take all of her music down from Apple to help out the indie artists. And Apple gave in, and so that's why everyone loves Taylor Swift.
I say, this sounds familiar, and I think we may have talked about this before, because my immediate thought to that is, that was Metallica's argument in the Napster position. They were saying, we don't need, it makes no difference to our bottom line, we're doing this for the artists who are at the bottom of the food chain, not for ourselves, and everyone hated them and didn't believe them.
Well,
and you're saying Taylor Swift is basically being lauded for taking exactly the
same
position.
Well, I mean, Metallica was annoying and Taylor Swift is endearing.
Oh, wow.
Quite frankly, you know, you can't apply the same standards to a bunch of middle-aged men that you can to a 20-something-year-old lady.
Yeah, there's an authenticity problem with guys that age trying to do heavy metal.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you just are not angry at that age.
What Green Day's music is now hilarious.
Yeah, I just find that deeply sad. The kind of the aging punk rocker
yes.
who's still trying to be a punk.
Yeah. Let's yeah. have another song about how we lost our girl whenever we were 17. Yeah.
Well, the alternative may be worse because, you know, I seem to remember reading some quote or seeing some video where Bono was saying that, you know, that they're still a punk band at heart. And like, yeah, you're a punk band, you know, playing in stadia, you know, with these enormous, you know, sort of $700 million production with a giant crab over the stage. You're just a bar band at heart.
Yeah, at heart, at heart.
No. And so you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, if you still want to have a career after a certain point.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they should give up and then reform as a different band, under a different name, and say, well, we were a punk band, but now we're a stadium rock band.
Yeah, but you can't go right into being the stadium rock band unless you're going in as Bono, except you're not Bono, you know, something else. Yeah, but that never goes well. Ask J.K. Rowling how well writing under a different name, or changing your style. Though.
Didn't Garth Brooks do that?
Oh,
Chris
Gaines.
Everyone knew.
Chris Gaines.
It transferred over.
Oh, that was so hilarious. Yeah.
I mean, I've never heard any of it. It may have been terrible music. I've never heard it.
Well, the interesting thing about Garth Brooks is that he started out as a rock and roll musician.
Okay.
That's what he wanted. He couldn't break into that scene. He wasn't able to do that, so he switched to country. And his country was always a little had a little bit of rock to it. Not like today, where it hardly sounds like country.
I was going to say, but country seems to have become a kind of cultural cannibal. It's absorbed
classic
rock. And actually, the funniest thing I've seen in a long time was, without a whit of guile or pretense or anything like that, there's a country band called the Band Perry. It's like a brother, two brothers and a sister. It's kind of like a sibling version of Lady Antebellum. On stage, doing a cover of Uptown Funk.
Oh my god.
And this was just... I think country's kind of become a cultural cannibal, and it can often get away with it. It didn't get away with it. This was just terrible.
I bet.
And, you know, I don't dislike the band. I actually really, really like the song, because it's that kind of early 80s electro-funk that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
But this was just not a... This was a car wreck. This was not something that could possibly work. But, sorry, you were talking about
But, yeah, so then Garth Brooks decided to do this whole Chris Gaines thing, and it did not turn out well.
Okay. Oh, so it didn't actually work.
Oh, no, it was a giant flop.
You mean artistically or critically?
Yes! I guess some of his songs were okay, but it was like, I remember VH1 did this Behind the Music Chris Gaines special, where they pretended like Chris Gaines was an actual musician and did all these things. They interviewed Billy Joel and they talked about Chris Gaines' drug habits and all of that, which, you know, he doesn't exist. He didn't have. You know, Garth Brooks, for all of his pictures, because he's got a bit of a pouchy face, he'd suck in his cheeks to create this sunken rocker look.
Oh, kind of like...
Yeah.
The image I have in my head is like the Black Crowes. They're kind of, you know, gaunt.
Yeah, that's what he was going for, and he had the hair all in front of his face and everything. It wasn't good. It really wasn't good.
That might be the definition of corporate rock. Right, you know, it is purely packaged and constructed for the purpose of...
Yes, that was the definition of corporate rock, especially the explicit transition.
So he was basically trying to be Kid Rock. Imagine as terrible as Kid Rock is, if it was worse yet by being inauthentic.
No, he wasn't trying to be Kid Rock, because Kid Rock is, you know, Trailer Park Rock, explicitly. He wasn't going for that. He was going for some sort of urban thing. Or not like rap, but like a real heavy metal type thing.
Okay.
Not like Kid Rock. Yeah. It was very interesting.
So he was trying to be like the Ted Nugent?
I guess so. It's kind of, except without the boar hunting.
Right.
Without the boar hunting?
Yeah, without the boar hunting.
Oh, that's
hunting.
He's a
giant hunter.
He's a giant... Wow.
Yeah. Right. In game of him, and he gets up with, you know, does the Game of Thrones, and then he's a giant hunter.
I had a phone call during the 2008 cycle that at the point in that whole business, when it had become apparent that it was going south, a friend of mine called and said, in all seriousness, it's okay, we're going to be okay. Ted Nugent has endorsed McCain. I can't remember exactly how he phrased it.
Yes.
But he was like dead serious, and I just thought, wow, we are so bummed.
Yeah.
we are just out. You know, if there was some doubt as to whether the Ted Nugent vote was in play. Maybe we could get people to vote if voting was done like Tinder. You know, you swipe on Barack Obama or Carly. Actually, the Republican primary couldn't get any worse, so maybe we should have a Tinder primary.
No. Think about that. You want all the people voting in the Republican primary who can't take the effort to go to the voting booth. You want people with the minimum effort. Donald Trump would win in a landslide. Everyone would be like, yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah.
Right.
Swipe right, Donald Trump. Yeah. No.
Yeah, that's fair. I was being somewhat facetious.
Yeah,
My primary argument against internet voting is that the sanitary thing about making people show up to the polls is that some people are stupid enough that they'll get lost on the way to the polling station, and you actually want to filter out those people. You know, you don't want to make it too easy, because you're exactly right. I mean, you know, people will not so much not take it seriously as I'm not sure that you want all the people in the world voting, because some people are just really stupid. You know, that was one of the things. The part of the promise of the early kind of internet explosion was that everyone would get to, you'd get to find out what everyone's opinion was, and then we found out what everyone's opinion was, and that a lot of people really have no idea what they're talking about and actively resist finding out more. I had an interaction yesterday with someone who, there was a story about a woman in Holland who was euthanized. And it was, it was something about the story just didn't sit right, and so the next thing that I did was I Google News, the name of the woman. And the only three hits were for three different articles written by this same guy. And that kind of made me a little suspicious, and so I said, well, are we sure that this is actually a real thing, that this is a legit report? And I got a lot of pushback just for asking that question, as if the mere outrageousness of the presumptively true story obviated any question of whether it was actually true. And I get the sense of a lot of that in the internet. And that kind of cesspool of anger doesn't strike me as being attractive. So why wouldn't you want it?
It is if you're young and angry.
Right.
It's a drug. A lot of people like to feel... There's nothing better than feeling righteous anger. And the internet's a great place to fuel your righteous anger.
To be outraged.
Yeah, you're going to be outraged about this and that and the other thing.
Well, we should... Let's put that for another day. Well, let's do that another time.
Okay.
It's just too much... It's too much... There are too many things to say about that, and I think the clock is probably marginal. How long have we been talking? We wanted to do about 30 minutes, 45
coming
minutes.
Coming up on 6 o'clock.
All right, we'll wrap it up and... see what comes out of it.
Sounds good.
Good luck.